Hey, welcome to the 80s, as I wrote it down in the notes, because I'm an idiot and my name is Steve. There you go, there's your outtake. Butt brain.
Travel back in time to the 80s, reliving the shenanigans.
It was the early 80s, and sex was still a good way to meet new people.
The disappointment.
Now that's a real shame when folks be throwing away a perfectly good white boy like that.
And the self-confidence.
I'm 6 foot, 3 inches tall, and maintain a very consistent panda bear shape.
Because just like you, we're stuck in the 80s.
Sure, it's not 1985 right now, but who knows what tomorrow will bring.
Hey, welcome to Stuck in the 80s. It's your old pal, Spearsy.
And Brad in New York.
And today we strap on a bike helmet and head out onto the dirt track to revisit a cult classic movie from the 80s.
Yep, it's our tribute to Rad.
You're willing to sacrifice building a solid future for a bicycle race. It's very self-destructive.
Would you try to understand? The only thing I'm good at is riding this bike. And now I have a chance to be the best. Maybe the best in the world. I can take those SATs anytime, maybe in 6 months. But this is the only opportunity I'll ever have like this. I started out as 1 in 1,000. Now it's 1 in 20. Now to give that up, I think that would be very self-destructive.
This episode of Stuck in the 80s is sponsored by The 80s Cruise. Join your Stuck in the 80s hosts along with MTV VJ's Mark Goodman and Alan Hunter in spring 2025 for a week-long trip on board the Royal Caribbean Explorer of the Seas. Performers will include Squeeze, Adam Ant, Christopher Cross, Sheila E., Men at Work, Andy Bell of Erasure, Quiet Riot, Information Society, Curtis Blow, Honeymoon Suite, The Alarm, and more. We should have a promo code anytime now, but write this date on your calendar, March 19th. That's when booking opens to the public. Go to www.the80scruise.com for more information.
You know, you're really pretty good on that bike. I mean, you picked up that move like that.
Well, I didn't have much of a choice, did I? So, are you going to ride Helltrack?
No, I kind of wish I could, but I still race for trophies. See, my factory sent me here for kind of a show and tell thing. You know, this really is beautiful. Bet you have a lot of fun around here.
Fun? You want to see fun? Then follow me. He's bad.
Rad, or Hell Track as it's known outside the United States, is a 1986 ode to BMX racing directed by Hal Needham. Yeah, guy who gave us Smokey and the Bandit, Cannonball Run, and the immortal, legendary Stroker Ace. That's the
now
flavor.
Now I want a chicken sandwich.
Rad is all about a small town boy played by Bill Allen, who is sort of a natural at BMX riding and who wants to race on Hell Track, a new race course that's being built in his hometown, but is intended only for pro racers. That's not cool.
Hey, man.
Totally not rad. Rad, the cast here blows me away. Lori Loughlin plays his love interest. She's adorable, by the way.
Oh my gosh. Just as cute as can be.
Yeah. She's a professional woman BMXer who falls for Bill Allen, aka Crew, which is short for Cruiser. Lovely.
Is that his real name?
Yeah.
Crew. Or is that a nickname that's been
renamed? No, it's a nickname. It's a nickname.
Okay.
I'm going to go with the nickname.
Yeah. If that's his name, then I hope that's because he was conceived while they were listening to the Shake It Up album and Cruiser came on.
Well, there's always that you can hope for.
Oh, that's the world I want to live in, Steve.
Meanwhile, Talia Shire, yeah.
Yo, Adrian!
From Rocky, plays the disapproving mom.
So good, so good.
Yeah, she's just like, as long as the check clears, I'm happy.
Yeah, after, look, we are going to give this all the love that it deserves, but I think Talia Shire is on screen for maybe 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, they shot all her stuff in a day. There's just no way they didn't.
But here's, to me, the key to making Rad just so rad. Jack Weston, who you know him as soon as you see him. And as soon as you see him, you're like, oh, he's got to be the villain. And of course he is.
Thank you, Mayor Jenkins, for your wonderful introduction. And thank you, you wonderful citizens of Cochrane, for allowing us to share with you this beautiful city and community.
You probably know that name. The next year, 1987, he plays Max Kellerman, who owns the little lodge in upstate New York from Dirty Dancing.
Now I want to go on holiday.
Got something to tell you about that later. He's a prototypical evil promoter who wants to keep our big hero crew out of L-Track because he has his own star played by Olympian Bart Connor. He wants him to win the race. So
yeah, and he pulls every shady trick in the book. Oh, new rules change today. Oh, another new rules change. Oh, sorry, it says kids with brown hair can't race. Just it's wild. It is
fun. Why are we honoring this movie now? Brad will tell you.
I'll tell you why. So I went to see Dune when we got back from the cruise, and was very excited. I enjoyed it. We can talk about it later, maybe, if you like. I know we did a show on the first Dune movie. I don't think we probably will on this one. So if you have thoughts, just get in touch with me. We'll talk about it. But enough about that. Rad. There was a trailer for it in front of Dune because it's been remastered and is being screened in theaters on March 21st, one night only. And I knew this is the kind of news that 80s Nation needs to have. So I got on the old phone and called up Spearzo and said, Spears, we got to do a show on Rad. And he's like, yeah, okay, checks out. So it's one night only. The movie itself, 90 minutes. You're thinking, oh, I'm going to get in, get out. There's also looks like about a 40, 45 minute special Q&A session that is moderated by Rad superfan and BMX rider Ed Helms.
Hmm.
That's all true, by the way. So I knew I know we have Rad superfans. I've had people. I actually had a coworker ask me if we were ever going to do a show on Rad. And this is my show for that coworker.
Bling, your wish is granted.
Yeah.
So I rewatched this for the first time in a long time this morning. It's available on Amazon Prime right now. In case for $4, you can rent it. For $10, you can buy it.
You can have it.
I pulled the trigger. I bought it.
Let me tell you something, Steve. I knew of this movie. I had never seen it until last night.
It is a cult classic. It bombed in the box office. I think it made $2 million on a $3 million budget. But and when it was released to VHS and Laserdisc, it was in the top 10 of the rental charts for 2 straight years.
Yeah, that's shocking. And I think the reason I didn't see it is just because of the timing.
Yes,
like 86. When you watch this movie, it feels like 1980.
Yes.
But it was actually released in 1986. And, you know, just like in 1986, was I going to go watch a movie about bike racing kids? No, I was a college man, Steve. Yeah. I didn't have time for such childish notions and outings.
1976. This would have been...
Oh, grief. I didn't know it word for word.
It is an unfortunate victim of timing as far as Brad and I are concerned. Yeah, but I'm sure a lot of you out there... Yeah, a lot of you out there probably saw it at the right age.
But like, spoiler alert, I enjoyed this when I watched it last night. And I think you will too, through the proper mindset and lenses.
Yeah. So, like we did for National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, we have a new sort of formula that we're following when we do a movie podcast now. And I hope you enjoyed that version because we're going to do it again. We're going to break it into like categories here.
One of which is pillars of awesomeness.
Right. So there's plot believability, cast likability, there's intangibles, how quotable is it? The moments you can live with and can't live without, and does it stand the test of time? So let's get started.
Oh, yeah. Let's do this thing.
Plot believability. Is it credible? I'm going to say right now, I knew nothing about BMX racing, and I still know nothing about BMX racing. But I'm going to go ahead and say, sure, it's as credible as can be by Hollywood standards anyway. If it feels familiar, it's because it's the movie American Flyers, which, by the way, is a much better version of this same
criminally underrated movie.
Yes. It's American Flyers meets Rocky with a pinch of Breaking Away.
Yeah, but you're right. Actually, just change Hell of the West to Hell Track and you're there.
Exactly. It is actually based on the real life of Eddie Fiola, who came out of nowhere and became a local legend in the early 80s and became a champion of the sport. He is in the movie. He does all the stunt work for Bill Allen.
Okay. So you're watching all these racing scenes and they're all goggled and helmeted. Like, there's no way that's actually the actor. It just isn't.
No.
I will say, like, look, where have I seen this movie before? It's Hot Dog the Movie. You just swap out the bikes for skis and trade the naked women for some chaste kisses. It's Footloose with a bike race instead of a dance. It's Hoosiers on Tires. It's The Karate Kid with Mongoose Kai against Rad Dojo. And that's what makes it so great. It is so fun. It's just like, is it credible? Sure. Have you ever seen an underdog story, 80s Nation? Yes, you have. Why is that? Because they're fun. Do you know what's going to happen? Yes, you do. Do you watch anyway? Damn straight you watch anyway. This is a lot of fun. Oh no, our hero has met a hardship. What will we do?
Just
first I must brood. The girl must call me out on it, and then I will rise to the occasion. Rise, rage against the dying of the light. Oh, it's Back to School with the bike race instead of a test. I mean, come on, this movie's been made a million times and we'll watch it 2 million times.
Yes. I love that you point out that the chaste kisses between Crew and Christian.
It's just so damn wholesome. I didn't need dessert. It's so sweet.
I didn't think about it till you said Hot Dog the Movie, swapping out the skis for the bikes. And there's no nudity, but there is like some uncomfortable moments that we'll talk about later on that I just can't quite come to grips with, but completely on target with this. So let's move on to cast likability. Is this a movie that we would go see based only on the cast?
I'm going to say yes.
Yeah. I think the cast means more to me now than it would have then. Bill Allen doesn't do much for me in the lead role. He had a minor career in Hollywood. He wrote a book, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Called.
Yeah, I was surprised this is kind of it. It's one episode here, one episode there.
He wrote a book called My Rad Career, where he talks about his roller coaster ride through the 80s in Hollywood and the people he met and the struggles that he had. So, you know, again, more likable to me now than he probably was then. Lori Loughlin, Ray Walston, who basically plays Mr. Hand from Fast Times at Ridgemont High again, just with a little bit of a twist.
Yeah. He's a local magistrate or something. I can't even figure out what he is.
It's weird. He's like,
that makes more sense.
Part of this town council. So there's your little Footloose in there for you.
Yep.
And then Bart Connor. That's just so crazy.
Yeah. I mean, Bart Connor is just stunt casting.
Yes.
And he's perfect in the, what we'll call the William Zabka jerk BMXer role.
Yes.
Just delicious. He doesn't have to act too much, which is good because Bart, you know, his career in Hollywood, not long and storied. Like you, I was shocked when I saw the cast list. Like, okay, we should do this show. And I start looking at the movie, kind of like, oh, I guess I'm going to have to watch this week. And I'm like, wait a minute, Talia Shire's in this?
I know.
And Ray Walston and Lori Loughlin. Oh, she is. I'm just going to go on and on about this. She is just adorable in this. There's not even a glimmer of the Operation Varsity Blues scandals that sent her to jail in 2020 for a couple months. Like, honestly, when that story broke, she should have just licensed this movie and played it on every channel for 3 weeks, and everyone would have been like, oh, Lori, it's okay.
Yeah.
I know you're just trying to do what's best for your kids and using money to solve problems in ways that were morally reprehensible. But other than that, my goodness, you can ride a bike.
I don't even know where
I fell in love with her all over again. I'm like, this is not a stuck in the 2000s. Podcast, so we're 2010, so we don't need to talk about the Varsity Blues scandal, but I could not stop reading about that. I listened to so many podcasts about that story.
Oh, sure, when it happened? Yeah,
every article that came out, I'm just like, tell me more. Oh.
So yeah, cast likability scores pretty high on that, which is unusual for a movie that performed so badly in the box office to have this
good of a cast. It's got just enough. Yeah, it's got just enough, like the experienced hands and the like, the fresh-faced look. There is no way that every extra in that movie is not a student in the high school in the small town in Canada where they filmed it. And you can totally tell. It's great.
Okay, let's move on. Intangibles. Let me just say that I think the product placement in this movie is a little out of control. I just, Let me put it this way. As soon as I finished watching it, I wanted to go to 7-Eleven to buy a copy of USA Today and some Kick cereal, then ride home on my Mongoose bike.
Yeah. They took the, you want a Pepsi, kid, you're going to pay for it. And they went long.
That's a thing of its time. I think today it's just better integrated to the point where you, it's more subliminal.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting that this movie was supposed to be called Balls Out.
Gee,
did you know that?
Why'd they change it?
They're still late in the movie.
There is
still
a line, yeah.
It says, go balls out. Go, you know, ride this race, you know, go balls out. It's worth noting, too, that it's sort of an intangible. The Hell Track, this fictional track that they build to attract professional riders to this town in Colorado. It's supposed to be Colorado, is it, or something like that?
Do they ever really say? I mean, with the opening shots, I'm like, that's clearly California. Then it's set in Canada. I looked that up. But
well, anyway, Hell Track.
I should say it's shot in Canada. It's set someplace in the United States. Yeah. I don't know if they name a state.
So it's worth noting that Hell Track itself, the one that they actually built on set for this movie, was so difficult that none of the stunt riders could actually complete the course.
Oh, jeez. That's awesome.
None of them could do a full lap. So the racing had to be filmed in sections. Like, okay, we're going to do this corner of the track. We're all going to film this. And it took, because of that, it took 2 weeks to film the race.
To film the four-lap race.
Which doesn't seem like a lot of time today. But I guarantee you on a $3 million budget,
yeah,
they budgeted maybe...
Well,
one day.
It's a long sequence. I was like, this is four laps, and they're going to show every lap.
Yeah.
Like, it was a non-trivial amount of bike riding at the end of it.
One of the stunt riders even broke his leg during the shooting, and he makes a cameo towards the end of the movie. He's sitting on a car, and he asks crew to sign his cast. So that is the actual stunt rider and his actual broken leg.
That's kind of a nice moment in the film, actually. Yeah. I thought it's, you know, the pro rider is given the, you know, the rookie a little respect. Like, hey, you did good. Go get him.
Another interesting cameo. There's these two twin actors who play a couple of villainous characters.
Yeah, they're the sidekicks on the Mongoose team.
They show up to a dance to celebrate the track, and they're wearing these really ridiculous outfits. And I'm like, I've seen these outfits before. They're the outfits that the aliens wear in V.
Oh, you're kidding. Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
They've been painted to look gray and futuristic. And that's why they're dancing around it. And I'm like, I know I've seen these before, but where?
They're so new wave, those bike riders.
Yeah.
Just not the kind of thing we see around here in whatever the little town's name was.
What stood out to you, intangible?
I tell you, the soundtrack is just, it's one good track away from just being magic. It's got some near misses, some kind of style copies of other underdog movie songs in it from our favorite former Little River Band lead singer, John Farnham.
Mm.
It's got a Beat Farmer's track to go along with a couple other bigger hits that I'll mention in a moment. So it's close. It's not something that, you know, you check it out on Spotify. You're probably not going to need a copy of that on vinyl. As far as the cameos go, there have to be like 50 some actual BMX riders in this, but that really wasn't my scene, so I didn't really recognize any of the names as the credits rolled for the stunt riders. Whoever had to play Lori Loughlin on the bike, that wig did not do Lori service. but every good 80s movie needs a good montage, and this one has a great newspaper delivery montage right at the beginning of it. Delightful. Although I'm not sure why these kids are delivering USA Today to people's doors, but there's that product placement again.
They've got maybe 20 copies each, which would fetch
them. Yeah, you're not going to make any money doing that.
You're going to make about $1 a day trying to deliver 20 newspapers, but on a BMX bike. What about quotes? Are there any? How do you think this movie ranks as far as quotes go?
I'm probably low. There are a couple of moments that I laughed. He's trying to, you know, Cruz trying to master this stunt, and he just keeps boffing it. And finally, you know, Lori Loughlin's character gives him some pointers, and he tries it again. He just lands flat on his back. And I look at the screen and I said, you over-rotated. And then 2 seconds later, Lori Loughlin says, you over-rotated. I'm like, okay, that's going to stick in my mind. But other than that, not like anything that entered into the pop culture lexicon.
I was choking down a bowl of Special K this morning while watching it. When Crew delivers the line to Lori Loughlin, God, what I wouldn't give to go ass sliding with you right now. And I'll still be cleaning up that mess later this afternoon.
I mean, if that line is in Hot Dog the Movie, it means something very different than it does in this movie.
I don't even remember the context of it, but I was just like, there we go. There's my takeaway quote. So, let's talk about the take it or leave it moments from this, from Rad. I'm going to say the one scene you cannot take out. And I've just thought about this. Now I'm looking at your notes and I'm realizing you're going to say the same thing. There's a big dance that the town holds when all the professionals come to town. It looks, it's oddly like a combination of a town celebration and a prom.
And like at a radio show, like there's an announcer for the dance. It's just kind of an odd vibe.
So there's this moment where Crew and Lori, I guess her name is Christian. I just can't call her Christian. Yeah. She's just going to be Lori to me.
That's fine.
They bring their bikes into the dance and they do like this seductive bike dance while Send Me an Angel by Real Life plays. And I think it says everything that needs to be said about this movie. And in a good way.
Yeah, it's remarkable. That whole dance scene is just, it's wild.
You can just Google it, by the way. If you don't want to watch this whole movie, Google Rad dance scene and you'll see the V outfits for starters. And then you will see this crazy slow dance to Send Me an Angel
on bicycles. And then, okay. So let's set the stage a little bit. So Bart Connor and his boys, and apparently some of his girls, show up and they're just like, oh, this is so, like, so small town. Oh, I bet you can't even get real drugs here. And then they start playing Sparks music that you can dance to, and they like get the spotlight dance. Like everyone's kind of standing around a circle and they're doing their dance and stuff. And that's pretty great just from what they're wearing, the V costumes. I didn't realize they were V costumes at the time. And the music, like, that's just a fantastic song that you don't hear very often. So that happens. And then we segue into the bike ballet thing.
What happened to my eyes? That is not Bart Taylor. Well, let's see what he can do.
Could I ever do any of those stunts on a bike? No, they're amazing. Like these people, yes. I don't care who's doing them, whether it's the actor or whatever. It's kind of hypnotic to watch.
I agree.
And then at the end, Crew rides off like Cinderella. He's going to turn into a pumpkin. Like, yeah, he pumps out of there like zoom. He's gone. I'm like, whoa, what's going on? I mean, was this like a risky business moment? I think you rode your bike home and then you whacked off. Like, what's going on? And we talk about the moments we could live without. At 90 minutes, there's nothing more you can take out of this picture.
No, it's
perfect. It's crisp. It's lean. It moves right along.
There's a moment where Ray Walston, who, keep in mind, I mean, we all know him as Mr. Hand.
My favorite Martian.
But he's a Hollywood legend.
Absolutely.
And a very serious actor. And there's this scene where he has to give the middle finger to Jack Weston.
Oh, I enjoyed that very much.
I did. But in the back of my head, I'm thinking, I bet that didn't come easily. I bet he read the script and he was like, are you serious? You want me to flick off another Hollywood legend? What would be really cool is if we found out later that there was a rivalry between them.
Actually some bad blood or something.
But barring that, I know what, based on what I know about Ray Walston, that must have been a tough thing for him to conjure up.
I don't know. His change of heart is kind of the one thing that is a little weird. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, like suddenly why he's backing the local kid or but that's okay. Like, just go with it.
Yeah. People
change their minds all the time. Sometimes I want a turkey sandwich, sometimes I want PB&J.
Okay, final category. Does this stand up decades later? Does it pass the test of time? Well, I think had this come out in 1981, it would have felt like it was in a more comfortable context. Because it, like we said, it feels like a late 70s or early 80s movie. Still, when it was released on VHS, it topped the rental charts for 2 years. So does it stand the test of time? Did it ever stand the test of time? I mean, did it stand the test of time when it came out? Apparently not, because nobody went to see it.
Well, yeah, I'm going to say it doesn't stand the test of time, and that's why it's so great, because it is such a perfect little time capsule.
Yes.
It's a time capsule almost of the time before it was made to us. Maybe that's what Canada was like then. I don't know. But the look is very 70s, the cars, the fashion, the haircuts. But visually, it's just a time machine. I'll watch it again just to check out the hairstyles. I'm like, oh my gosh, check out the mullet on that guy. The small town feel is really well captured, I think. And the town represents well as a small town. You know, like the cops, like, oh, I've been chasing those kids for years, but there are local kids. We got to look out for them, you know? So there's some things there that, like, are they tropey? Yes. Is there a reason that things like that are tropes? It's because they happen all the time. So
yeah,
you know, get on board. There are times, like I said, where the plot doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but look, just don't think about it too hard. Just crank on those pedals, get over that jump and onto the platform and show that hell track who's boss.
You know who I'd like to show his boss right now?
The Seggies.
What's happening, hot stuff?
Ah, by the sound of the gong, it must be time for Mystery Movie Moments. We will play a snippet of a movie from the 1980s. I promise. And if you recognize it and react accordingly, I don't know why I'm changing my spiel here.
Yeah.
Doing something for 19 years. Why am I changing it today? We will revel in your glory by sending you a postal-friendly bottle opener. So... sound good? Everyone on board?
Love it.
Cast your minds back to episode 691. Here was the mystery clip.
Just because I don't know what it is, doesn't mean I'm lying.
That strange brew. We did a podcast on that a long time ago.
Oh my gosh.
It's hard to do a podcast on a movie that's that funny. Because what can you say about it? You can't say anything that's funnier than the movie.
Right. All you can say is, hey guys, it's Hamlet. Did you know it's Hamlet? Okay, let's go to the Seggies.
With a lot of beer. We had some winners, but not as many as I thought. I'm kind of surprised by this.
Yeah, well, you know, people kind of swamped us out on Name That 80s Tune, so don't worry about it. Winners this week include The Tromboner, Todd in Minnesota, John Ross from Charlotte, North Carolina, Plain Pulling Tom, Brock in North Dakota, Tom Korn in Austria, John Clexton, Lou, Sweet Lou Greeley, Maureen Holt, and Ed Berry.
Every time you say John Ross from Charlotte, North Carolina, all I think about is my old friend at work sitting there behind the table waiting to help me with some problem with Jira or a login issue. John Ross from IT would be the last person who probably ever works at that company.
Someone's got to collect the laptops.
John, you
got to
send me a photo or something so I know that there's – because I'm picturing, you know, a guy like who's probably about in his late 50s. This is the real John Ross I know. White hair, rounded spectacles, and just a expression on his face like, I'm here to help you with your problem, Steve. So, okay. I forget what comes next. Oh, that's right. We got to play another tune.
We play another clip. It's amazing.
It's bad. It's bad. It's the Gatorade. It's clearing my head. Pay attention. Here's the movie clip for this week.
Come on, Neil. You learn what it's like to fire an employee.
If you know it, email us at podcast@sit80s.com. Tune in soon to find out if you're a winner. The mystical refrain that is Name That 80s Tune. We will play a piece of a tune from the 80s. If you recognize it and email us and stop trying to make this stuff up on the fly, Steve, you're not good at this. Get a postal-friendly bottle opener. Do you still have some?
I do. No, I have a ton of them. I've just restocked last year.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So again, episode 691. Was that our Oscar Razzie show?
It was. Yeah. It seems like a long time ago.
Jeez. No kidding.
I guess
the Oscars
was
just this weekend. Last weekend.
That's right. Yeah.
Crazy. Anyway, pay attention. Here's the clip. That's Say It Isn't So by Hall & Oates.
Yeah.
I don't think we fooled too many people with
this. No, we kind of telegraphed that one since we talked about Hall & Oates at the tail end of that episode. But that's okay. That's okay. We love hearing from you guys.
There's a long list here. Do you want to split it up?
No. I'm going to do this. Here we go. Winners include all sentient beings in the known universe. Explicitly listed, the Tromboner, Cincinnati Joe, Chad in NorCal, Michelle from Lexington, South Carolina, Lito in Austin, Alan Titus, Don Hammock, La Luna in San Diego, Bluefest from San Diego, Kelly in Huntsville, Alabama, Carol Parrott, Jason in Memphis, Dan in Omaha, Martino in Vancouver, Brent the Chem Teacher, Dave from New Hampshire, who concedes he is closer to Canada than we are, Mr. Whiskey, Commodore 64 Will, Todd in Minnesota, Jan stuck in Lawrence, Kansas, Michael West, John Ross from Charlotte, North Carolina, Plane Pulling Tom, Kevin Liu, Jonathan Thompson, formerly in Tuscaloosa, now back in Daphne, Alabama, Peter Ryan, Rock the Good Egg, New Wave Todd, Lou, Sweet Lou, Greeley, Kevin Serving Wench, Commander Bourbon, Ed Berry, Brian in San Francisco, Andrea, not Andrea, Crava, David De La Dirt, Sir Lee of Edland, and Lynn with three N's in Nebraska.
Brent the chem teacher. Is that the first time we've heard his name?
No, I've actually had some emails with him. I had a chem teacher named Brent back in the day. I'm like, that's not you, is it?
No, I just kind of gives me the cold sweats. I sucked at chemistry in high school. We had the best chemistry teacher there ever was. It was a guy who was also our biology teacher and who took us to Europe one summer. Couldn't have been a more understanding, compassionate, and effective communicator and teacher. Trying to teach me chemistry is like trying to teach me, you know, ancient Greek. It's just not going to work out. In fact,
there are no places in my brain for this to sit.
There, I guarantee you I can master ancient Greek before I can do chemistry. And
You master ancient Greek, we can work on ancient Greek chemistry.
That'll be fun. It's got to be easier than real chemistry.
A lot of alchemy and other nonsense.
I want to say I barely passed that class through just like complete sympathy on Mr. Straub's part. That the only way.
Oh, this is the famous Mr. Straub.
The famous Mr. Straub.
Euro Straub.
Euro Straub indeed. Anyway, let's spin the wheel, find out who takes home the postal friendly bottle opener.
Yeah, I asked Steve to vamp a little bit because I knew it was going to take me about 10 minutes to get the wheel ready with all these names.
I didn't mean to.
No, it's perfect. Now it's all ready. It's pretty heavy, but we're going to give it a spin. You ready?
Okay, go for it. One of these days I'll spin it. I don't think I ever have.
That can't be true.
I bet someone knows. That's some weird factoid that somebody... It was episode, 394. Anyway, it looks like it's going to land on Kevin Liu. Okay, excellent. Kevin, send us your postal-friendly address, and we'll send you the swag.
The opener of bottles.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
To have a bottle right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like to create a chemical reaction between booze and my liver. That's possible. Brent, any suggestions?
Your wish has been granted.
In the meantime, pay attention. Here's this week's mystery clip. If you know it, email us at podcast@sit80s.com and tune in soon to find out if you're a winner. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
Could 7-Eleven offer the same kind of fountain soft drink value as fast food places? Sure, but you'd get lots less for your money. Because we'd have to cut our 44-ounce Super Big Gulp in half down to their 22-ounce size. Ounce for ounce, our Super Big Gulp gives you almost twice as much for your money. We even give you your choice of Coke or Pepsi. They don't. 7-Eleven's biggest drink is your best value, and that's what makes our 44-ounce Super Big Gulp super.
And we're back. We have a few minutes left. I thought we can talk about Rad being a cult classic. And maybe it wasn't on our list until today as one to hold on to and kind of watch, once a year. But kind of curious, Brad, what other cult movies do you like make a point of like, I got to watch this at least once a year?
Well, I don't know if I'd go all the way to once a year, but I do really enjoy Repo Man, which I know I kind of rag on, but I will watch it. And Brazil, which is like a Terry Gilliam. It's so long, but it's just dystopia, dystopia, dystopia. And nobody ever gets my quotes from that movie. Between You and Me, Sir, the number three. Those are the two that come leaping to mind. I would also throw Heavy Metal and UHF on my list. And I think this is probably a cult classic because I don't think it did any box office, but found a lot of life in the rental market, and that would be Better Off Dead.
Yeah, yeah. I worked at a video store about then, and I, that was a movie that was flying off the shelf. So yeah. I don't really think of it as a, although maybe that's what makes it a classic as far as the cults go. But
I mean, when the kids were watching that and they're like, oh, we rented this great movie called Better Off Dead. And I would say, oh, yeah, I saw that in the theater. They're like, really? You saw it in the theater? I'm like, yeah, because that's just how damn cool I am. Weirdos.
I don't know that I did. That it's, I mean, I'm starting to forget more than I remember.
Well, I specifically remember it because it was when I was working at the Fox Fullerton Theater. It was like a Sunday afternoon, and my sister and I were working, and we were like, you know what? Let's just go in and watch this one, which we very rarely, if ever, did.
Yeah.
So we went in, sat in the background, watched the movie.
Savage Steve Holland movie.
Yep.
He did one called How I Got Into College that was from the late 80s. I think it might have been 1988 or 89. Mm-hmm. That had Anthony Edwards in it.
Right. That's right.
That was actually a really good one, too. And nobody talks about that one. I think at one point I owned it on VHS. I don't know that it was ever released on DVD. But I would love to talk to Savage Steve Holland. I wonder if he'll come on the show.
Get him on the show. That'd
it's
be amazing.
So random which people say yes and which people just kind of blow you off. But How I Got Into College, if you like that kind of sense of humor, that, you'll see more of it there. Got other cult movies I enjoy. I don't know how many times it took me to see Spinal Tap before I finally made it all the way through, because we would only go to see it in the midnight movies.
Oh.
And so by 1 o'clock, I'm usually dead to the world. At least back then. Today, it's even worse. Probably nothing I watch after 10 o'clock sticks with me. Highlander, I know, I don't know if it's really a cult classic, but I still... Well, I'll quote that all the time.
I don't think it had mainstream success, did it? I mean, you and I belong to a community that worships this movie for so many reasons. And
rightfully so. I knew Xanadu still remains the single most downloaded episode of Stuck in the 80s when we did the 40th anniversary tribute to Xanadu.
It's amazing.
I have to go back and look because, I mean, the way the stats keep getting kept, it's difficult. But at the time, I know it was. There's a movie with Peter O'Toole called Creator. I think we talked about it on the show once.
Filmed on campus at UC Irvine.
Mm.
My alma mater.
Go Anteaters, right? Or Banana Slugs.
Go Anteaters. No, the Banana Slugs are Santa Cruz.
Okay. And then there was this movie called Always. I don't know if you remember that with Richard Dreyfuss.
Oh, sure. And Holly Hunter and John
Goodman. And I don't think it was a huge hit, but it was I think it was Spielberg. Which is
I think
unusual.
So. Yeah.
And it was a remake of a movie from like the 30s or 40s. And for some reason, there's this whistling scene that Richard Dreyfuss is always whistling when he flies his plane when things get dangerous. And I'll do the same whistle a lot.
Oh, funny.
I won't do it now because it's incredibly annoying even when I do it. So no sense doing it for all posterity. But go Google that on YouTube and... Always Richard Dreyfuss whistling, and you'll know the whistle that I do when I am feeling stressed. So anyway, we hope you enjoyed our little tribute to Rad. Like I said, you watch it on Amazon Prime or
you can get yourself to the movie theater on March 21st for a 7 p.m. local screening.
I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, look, this is a fun movie. You don't need to care about bikes. You don't need to know anything about small towns. You don't need to know how to spell Lori Loughlin's last name.
Because we did it five different ways in the notes.
It's just fun. It's 90 minutes. It's not going to hurt you. You know, clean up the dinner dishes, pony up your $4, and time travel back to 1980-something and just enjoy this. It's so fun.
Yeah. And when you're done, come back and hang out with us because Brad and I are here, hopelessly stuck in the 80s.
Good race, man.
Yeah, it was. Thanks.
Looks like you're out of a job, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, this isn't the only game in town.
Now that we're official, think we got room on the Rad team?
Good idea.
Why not?
All right.
Yeah.
What a team.
Stuck in the 80s is now on Patreon. If you'd like to support the show, go to patreon.com/stuckinthe80spodcast. Special thanks to Check Battery Daily for our theme music, and thanks for listening. Taking a chance.